This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 107. We're going to shoot the breeze over the latest cloud news, recorded live December 7th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, AC.
Hey, man. How's it going?
I am de-stressing and a whole lot happier, CJ.
Passport status, please.
Well, I don't have a passport, but my passport exists.
Somewhere in the Western Hemisphere?
I'm having an existential passport experience. It is in the Western Hemisphere, yes.
Is it legal for someone else to have your passport? It's not a concern right now, I guess.
Well, I don't know. The passport office were okay giving it to somebody else. So.
It's all
I hope so.
So just make sure you have a buddy that's going to be flying from Australia over to Los Angeles, over to the United States. He's going to show up with two passports. One is his and one is his fake papers he got from.
That's right. So actually he's in New Zealand right now, but he's flying via Australia to get here.
Okay.
So he's picked the passport up in New Zealand and is flying over to the States.
Passport in hand.
Correct. Yep. And I'm meeting him 3 hours before our flight to Mexico.
Okay. Well, but you're on the same flight. So worst case,
yep.
If the family's with you, and worst case, if his flight is delayed getting into Los Angeles, then you just have to jump to whatever flight he's going to be taking to Mexico.
Exactly.
You just need to be on the same plane he's on. So you guys are together.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It just means I can't check in until I have a passport in hand. I'm actually not so worried about his flight getting delayed as so much as him arriving and there being like 6 747s full of people in customs.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
But anyway, so I'm feeling a whole lot more upbeat than I was 24 hours ago about my ability to go on vacation.
Not as much of a pucker factor?
Major pucker factor. This has come down so close. Like there are no other options. Like if this one friend of mine had not been coming from New Zealand to the States on this particular day, This whole thing wouldn't have worked out. Like I would have had to figure something else out.
You know, you never seem to get really like anxious or really, you never show your stress.
Oh, really?
I don't think you show it that well. Meaning that I don't think you show it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I've tell you what though, like it's been, I've not been sleeping right over this. When your family's all ready to go on vacation and everybody's ready to go and you're like, I might see you there.
Well, I'm sure that they've taken a bit of the wrath of a little bit of stress that's come out of you. But
oh yeah, definitely. No, so we're all ready to go.
Awesome. Cool, man.
Yeah. How about you?
I am doing good. I'm teaching a new class towards the end of this week for Microsoft, working on a special API. And so it's fun because it's an API that's in very early state. And it's basically trying to deduce how things work without any documentation.
Oh, yeah.
From a boot camp I sat in and a couple samples that are it's kind of funny because the samples that I have are being cleaned up and refreshed before they are distributed to the customers that are going to be using them.
Right.
But when the customers get them will be on the first day that I start teaching, which is the same time I would get them. So The class I'm going to be teaching is on code that's a little bit old, maybe like a month or two old. So it's a little dicey. And there's some concepts that are a little hard to figure out just looking at the code.
It's the old API chicken and the egg problem.
It is. You know what I find though, that's interesting is it's a REST API and then they've got a .NET managed wrapper around it. And, it really does solidify my personal preference that, and this is not like saying that one is better, but to me, it's my personal preference.
Go straight to REST.
I like using straight to REST. I don't care for SDKs because it just, I don't like managed wrapper. I don't like wrappers around a REST API. I know it means it simplifies some of the plumbing that I have to write, but frankly, I'm used to writing that anyway. Mm. It just, to me, looking at a REST API, it really expresses what needs to be done and what's possible.
I mean, there are already wrappers to deal with a lot of the REST plumbing, right? So there's like, you know, JSON.NET, for example.
Mm.
that can make calls and get payloads back and, you know, serialize and deserialize into objects and all that sort of stuff for you. So, you know, it's not as hard as it used to be.
I don't think it is either. This one, they've done some stuff where I do think it does help in some ways, in that this API is backed by Azure AD. Fundamentally, it's backed by Azure AD, but there's a certain piece of it where you have to get the token from Azure AD and then hand the token to this API to get a new token because there's additional business logic that needs to happen that needs to get to give you a new token that it accepts. And it's got other things baked up inside of it. I'm not going to get into the details of it, but there's this interesting hierarchy that has to be present and only the API knows it. Azure AD doesn't. And so it's kind of, it's interesting how they do it. And so I've been able to document it through the rest piece of it, but it's interesting because so what's funny about this one is that from what I understand, 50% of the people that are going to be using it, over 50% of people are going to be using it are not on the .NET stack.
Gotcha.
They are Java or PHP or Rails type people. So
they're going to want to know what the underlying REST calls are anyway.
Exactly. So
yeah,
it's interesting. The engineers have been giving me the sample code, but they're not giving me any documentation about the REST stuff. So I went through and for half of a day, ran through this huge sample that did all these things. And as it put something in this console app, I took a note of what it said and I watched Fiddler and just said, okay, that was session number 22. Okay, that was session number this.
Gotcha.
So I've got this one Fiddler trace of just everything, but.
Nice.
So it's all good.
Nice.
Hey, I give one update though. I got to give Microsoft a bit of a good shout out here. Last week, I kind of bagged on them a little bit about my Surface Pro and the display adapter and the.
Oh yeah.
Not having it wake up and stuff.
Yep.
Shout out to you. Thank you. But within what, like an hour or two of putting some blog post up and the podcast post going out as well, there was Microsoft released a new display adapter. And I got to tell you, since I've installed it, I have not had a single time that got a knock on wood on that one, but haven't had a single time where it screwed up on me.
That's great.
Yeah.
Hopefully it stays that way.
Yeah. I did try and use my Surface outside when it was really cold and we were like in the 40s for like swim practice and Surface kind of locked up when it was in the 40s. So I thought that colder would be better for a computer, but
weird.
Yeah. Had to hard reboot. I was just playing a video.
Well, it sounds like they've ironed out at least some of the problems. So
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
That's good.
Hey, so we've got some news to go through today. So, this is kind of an end, you know, we're going to get into prediction shows and things like that as we enter the new year. So stay tuned for those things. But as we sort of finish out the year, we're going to finish off with some news topics on various cloud things. So do you want to kick us off with one of those?
I do. I want to kick you off with an ironic one.
Okay, perfect.
So last week, Microsoft announced that the title of the article is Microsoft finally releases its Azure Portal Management Solution. So we got
dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, it's like
dun, 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 dun. Like
it's so we've had multiple portals for managing your Azure stuff. It goes way back to a Silverlight based portal that we had, and then we had
I forgot about that.
And we had that one, and then we had the one that is at manage.windowsazure.com that's out there right now, and that's always been the production portal. And then there is a newer portal that was announced at Build, 2014? It was announced at Build 2014. And it was more, it's only concept of this, of blades and a much more responsive kind of interface. That one had a code name of people might have been familiar or heard something called Ibiza. And that one is the one that they now say is done, that's in production, that's now reached general availability. But there's a little bit of stuff that's not still. You can't cut over completely because the new portal is based on this technology called Azure Resource Manager or ARM, which is a provisioning templating kind of model. And then there's the old model was something called the Azure Service Manager. Only services inside of Azure that support ARM can go in the new portal. And there apparently are 26 different services that Azure offers and 23 of them are in the new portal and 3 of them are not.
Yeah, and kind of the 3 that are not are kind of important.
Yeah, the one that I've been waiting for is Azure AD. Yeah. So it's a little disappointing that one's not there yet. We're still waiting for that one to kind of move over from the old portal to the new portal. Still waiting there, but then, and I think that there's actually...
Hey Siri, Why is Azure Active Directory not in the new portal?
Okay, I found this on the web for why is Azure Active Directory not the new portal.
She missed it.
Yep, that's my Kiwi-isms. Never mind.
That's okay. My Southern-isms don't work with speech to text anyway.
Sorry, so yes.
Yeah, so it's just, it's the new portal is done. It's out in production. It's now GA. There are a few services that are not available in the new one. You got to go to the old one to still use them and manage them. The big one being Azure AD. I forget what the other two are off the top of my head. Do you know what those are?
No, I know that I don't know if this is one of them, but I can't see Azure websites that are not created through the new portal. So I'll like classic Azure websites don't seem to show up.
Yeah, that's true. Which is weird because it's inconsistent. If you have the old virtual machines, they do show up in the new portal.
Yeah.
Or you can create the V2 VMs and they show up in the new one as well, but they don't show up in the old one. But with websites,
Some reason websites are not showing up. I think it's got something to do with Resource Manager.
Yeah.
But anyway, I can't see classic Azure websites showing up in the new one right now. I don't know if they'll fix that or not.
I know that they're close on getting AD in the new portal. I have seen it. It looks really good. I'm really happy with where it's going. I just personally want to see it get in there. That's the only reason I use the old portal is for Azure AD right now.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I use it all the time for Azure AD because we're doing a bunch of work with the APIs and things like that. And you've got to go in and see users and applications and things like that. So I wanted to play around with that, but classic portal it is for now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that new portal has taken so long to get out that it's already dated.
Yeah. There's some pieces to it that I'm not really thrilled with. The one thing I don't like about it, and the old one didn't, the old one didn't solve this either, but the thing that I don't like about it is that you can't really manage two different sets of resources at the same time. Right, you dive into one manager website, and if you have to go manage something with a SQL database, you got to come flung all the way back out, and then go back in to go work at a SQL database, then come all the way back out, and then go back in to work with a website. And to me, it would be nice. I've got a QNAP NAS device at home, and it's got a nice thing that looks very much like, say, iOS or like a Windows Phone or whatever, where I have lots of little apps. And as I open up an app, it's almost like a mix between the iOS app and like Windows, where I get little tabs going across the top of the things that I have open. So I can jump between the file manager, I can jump between the security manager and all these different things. That's the kind of what I wish I had inside the Azure management piece, but I'm with you. It feels a little dated.
It's not my favorite. Like, I just don't know. For some reason, I just don't love the horizontalness of it. But anyway,
yeah,
that's personal more than, it's reasonably snappy. It seems to work pretty well. So I'm glad they've got it out, but it's a shame not all the services are in there.
Yeah. Oh, well. How about you? You want to give us a bit of news?
Yeah. So for all of our European listeners, it looks like Azure and Office 365 had some issues last week, particularly in Europe. But not the statement that Microsoft released said some customers, particularly those in Europe and the UK, because it doesn't sound like UK is part of the Europe anymore, been unable to access services earlier today. Services are fully restored, and we thank customers for their patience. So basically, this was a pretty horrific outage. And as I understand it, it relates to the login flow or login process with Azure AD. And it seemed to affect a lot of people in Europe. But you were also saying you had problems in your tenant in the US.
I did, yeah. I got up this project I'm working on, I've been getting up super early. And so I got up at 4 o'clock. I think, I can't remember what day this was, but I got up at 4 o'clock one morning and I couldn't get into any of my stuff in Azure 365. I went to login.microsoftonline.com and the site would come up, but nobody was home.
Yeah, that's kind of...
Wouldn't do anything.
Kind of a little bit awkward.
Yeah. I mean, in one sense, it's nice because we have these nice federated auth and everything's through one piece, but one thing that's bad about it is that when it doesn't work, you're screwed. And I saw it, apparently there was something with like the certificates where like someone forgot to renew the login.microsoftonline.com. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh God. SSL gets the better of people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It got me with the back end of my trips a number of times. And it's one of those things that's just, I don't know why, but it trips people up more often than you'd expect.
Yeah. I think that the best solution of this is just not to use SSL for anything. It makes it so much simpler.
Hey, at least the service will be up as opposed to secure.
Hey, the one thing I don't have to deal with is the certificate. So, I mean, hey, there you go.
So one of these, actually, this brings up a...
I'm totally kidding. Okay.
Yeah. No, he's just being a smarty pants. Is Steve Peschke's service, office365monitor.com or office365mon.com. If you're not familiar with it, Steve Peschke is like a, I don't know, he's like, he might not be happy with me when I say this, but he's like the granddaddy of SharePoint. He's been at SharePoint for ages, right?
Yeah.
Doing stuff for ages. And now he's working on, he's left Microsoft. He's working on this new thing called office365mon.com. And it basically monitors your Office 365 subscription for downtime and all that sort of stuff. And it's pretty cool, actually. It's pretty interesting. You can go in and see, it does all these probes where it'll hit different pages in SharePoint and so forth and tell you what's what. And I'm just sort of looking back through my logs from last week, and I don't see any big outages on my tenant, but... it's quite good because it goes through and it'll tell you, hey, at this time, at this date, I wasn't able to communicate with a particular thing for, X many seconds or minutes or hours or what have you.
Yeah.
And so the idea here is that you'll be able to go back to Microsoft and say, hey, I was down for 4 hours or whatever and you owe me a refund and all that sort of stuff.
It's pretty cool service. He's what's really cool about it, the startup side of me is really pumped to see how well he's, how successful it's been, how fast his growth has been and all that. So it's been a really cool watch.
Yeah, exactly. He's doing a great job of it. So office365mon.com.
Yep. It's a cool one.
Excellent.
So another bit here is that Amazon had a nice little announcement that said they bring Microsoft users into AWS with their new Active Directory service. And it's a fully managed implementation of Microsoft's authentication and user management service. They have a primary offering that's more like an enterprise suite and then a basic offering. And it's essentially Amazon will manage your AD, but AD is running not as a service. It's running inside of Amazon EC2 VMs.
Right.
Which, I mean... It doesn't really matter, right? It's still a service for you. And it's the idea here is to be able to do the same. They want to be able to offer the same thing that Microsoft can offer with Azure, in the sense that if you're on-prem and you want to have, you can either have your Active Directory living in the cloud, or you can have your on-prem connected to your cloud AD that they have inside of AWS, and then your VMs inside of AWS can then be connected and take advantage of that. So you essentially can have your directory stretched across both from on-prem to your resources and assets that you have in AWS, doing the exact same thing that we can do inside of Azure. So they're just trying to, it's kind of a catch-up kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's nice from a infrastructure point of view as well. You can have your AD up in AWS or in Azure and stretch it to that, obviously. And so when you're, for whatever reason, you might have an outage on premises, but your AD in the cloud still runs and things can still talk to it and you can still get authentications happening and stuff like that. So it's also a nice way to, make your infrastructure a little more fault tolerant.
Yeah. So you can, customers can go take a look at this now. You can try the service for free for a month or what comes to 750 hours. Or you can pay for it. After that, you can pay for it. It costs 40 cents per hour, which that comes out to be about $300 a month.
Gotcha.
So $300 a month for your hosted AD.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think this is really interesting for services like Microsoft servers and things like that that you host in the cloud, right, that need to talk to Active Directory. So things like SQL Server, SharePoint, stuff like that needs to authenticate against AD. And so having an AD close to them and up in the cloud is usually a good idea. Mm-hmm. And gives them an option for that.
Absolutely.
Hey, I've got an interesting one. Obama lost his shit at the Microsoft shareholders meeting the other day.
Yes, he did.
So what's interesting about this is this is the second year since he's left. I think he left about 2 years ago. The first year after he left, he didn't go to the shareholders meeting. And it was basically Microsoft asking him not to go, to give Satya his first sort of public thing as at the shareholders meeting, and he didn't show up at the shareholders meeting. And then this year he showed up and started saying all sorts of dubious things that people weren't happy with. And so he basically said two things. He said Microsoft should talk about or provide hardware metrics. So this is about how many units they're selling of Surface, basically, as I understood it. And then the second one was disclosing profit margins and sales for its cloud business. So instead of he basically called bullshit on the run rate metric of $8.2 billion for Microsoft Cloud and said, run rate is not detailed enough. You need to tell us, like, how many actual sales you've made and what the profit margins on those sales are.
Yeah.
Which, you know, he's individually the largest shareholder of Microsoft stock. I think he's got like 4% or something like that. But yeah, I can kind of tell why Microsoft don't itemize out how many cloud sales and what their margins are, because it's quite competitively hot information, right? And also Microsoft are building data centers like crazy all over the world, and I suspect they're not making any money on the cloud just yet. At least certainly in Azure world, and probably in 365 as well, in terms of just the expansion must be costing a fortune, right? And so their outgoing moolah versus their incoming moolah is probably not that great.
Yeah, I think he actually called the run rate as, quote, bullshit.
Yeah.
I think he said that, and they quoted him as saying that.
One of the interesting things here is that once you start citing a metric publicly, you kind of have to continue doing it.
Yeah.
And so they're very cautious about, you know, breaking that seal, because once they do, you know, you got to keep continuing to do it.
Well, yeah, and they're being pretty aggressive on stuff. We're sitting here at the end of 2015. I think what was the last number that they published was 8 billion. Is that what it was? Somewhere around there?
8.2, yeah, something like that.
8.2. Their goal is to get to 20 billion on their run rate by 2018. So that's just two more years of almost coming to like 2.5 to 3xing that number. So that's or 2.5x. That's a pretty significant jump. But the other thing that's kind of that's interesting about this is that when you look over at Amazon doesn't share any of their information about this as well. And there is a lot of theory on how much of this business, how much of AWS is their business at Amazon, their bottom line as well. A lot of companies that do a lot of monitoring for different cloud-related services, they've got their theories on how big it is based on how big their growth is and how many resources they actually manage and stuff. But it's, you know, there's a big gap there between the two. So yeah, it would be a pretty big deal for one of the two to start disclosing this kind of information, especially from a stock perspective, because it's either going to make you look really, really good or really, really bad.
Mm.
I mean, there's not much of a middle ground on this one. So I get why they're playing their cards close to the vest. And you're right. I mean, we just talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago that, was it Azure has 28 data centers worldwide. They're adding 4 more next year. They've publicly said they're adding 4 more next year, 2 in the UK, 2 in Germany. And that's more today. 28 is more than AWS and Google combined.
Yeah, exactly. It must cost a fortune. And it's all investment, right? And so investment costs money, obviously, and money means more, obviously, more money out the door, and so less profit. Go ahead.
Yeah.
It was also reported when they were talking about phones, and there was a question asked about from an audience member that said, "Why is there a lack of key apps on Windows Phone, like one for Starbucks?" Which absolutely cracks me up. First, that somebody would ask such a stupid question.
Yeah.
Pardon my French, because like seriously, how not up to date is this dude, right?
And that's not a quarterly call kind of a thing.
Like, what the? Yeah. Anyway, I'm just sort of lost for words about that one. Like, do you see what's happening with Windows Phone at the moment? Maybe like. Anyway,
you should be getting dizzy as it's kind of circling the drain. I mean,
right. It's not looking good. But anyway, Nadella Sacha responded by citing the company's plan to appeal to Windows developers, allowing them to target both platforms, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's a sort of a non-answer. I mean, it's like it's an admission like, yeah, we don't have key apps. And it's also, in my view, reading between the lines, it's like, and we don't really care.
Yeah.
But we think we've got lots of upside for people building apps for big windows.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be some trickle-down Apponomics to Windows Phone for that, maybe. And then, so during that comment, Barmer apparently said, that won't work, as Nadella was speaking, which...
He cut him off?
I don't know if he cut him off. I suspect there was a reporter sitting near him in the audience who heard him say that. I don't think he stood up and pointed and went, that won't work, right? I suspect a lot of these comments were not, you know, big public statements by Barmer, but were talking to reporters at the event or, you know, sort of muttering under his breath while he was in the audience. It doesn't look like he sort of stood up and threw anything at Satya or anything silly like that.
No running up there saying developers, developers, developers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Got all sweaty and Eye of the Tiger on us. So, yeah, so that was kind of an interesting piece of news that Barmer is sort of giving people some grief at the AGM, that or the annual general meeting. Yeah.
Mm. I got another bit of news here around Amazon. Amazon announced a new thing called Amazon Route 53 Traffic Flow. So what this is pretty cool. So this is a global traffic manager. What this does is it gives you an easy to use and cost-effective traffic management service, lets you manage how your users are routed to your application's endpoints, whether they're in a single AWS region or they call them AWS regions, they mean data center.
Gotcha.
Or distributed around the globe. The way it's done is that you've got a you can set up different policies, and you kind of can. It's a cool little designer thing that you set up almost like a little flow chart in the console, or you can import them using an API or a JSON file. But it allows you to like say, you know, if customers are coming from this region, then I'm going to route them to this. If they're coming from like Europe, then route them to this data center inside Europe. Or if they're coming from US to that. I know we've got something like this in Azure. I thought that AWS had something like this. I was kind of taken back by this. And then I went searching for it and was like, wow, they don't have something like this.
Yeah, I think the Azure Traffic Manager was kind of ahead of them on this for a while. And it's really smart about being able to say, so say you were running a couple of Docker clusters in different regions of the world to give you geo-redundancy. You could pipe people to, you know, Europe or pipe them to the west coast of the States, depending on where they were. But if one of those data centers go down, then you could redirect traffic all to the European one, for example, if the west coast went offline, and your app would stay up. So that's pretty cool, not just from a performance and speed perspective, but also from a redundancy perspective.
Oh, yeah, it totally is.
I got one more. I got another piece of news.
Go for it.
Azure Container Service Preview. So back on the 2nd of December, Ross Gardler, who's a program manager on the Azure team, who does a lot with Docker and Azure and things like that. He's a Linux head, right? He's been in the Linux world for a long time. He works on the Azure team and he's working on the Azure Container Service. And they launched a preview of what they're calling ACS, which is quite funny. That's a reused acronym.
Yeah.
But Azure Container Service. And it's you know how last episode we were talking about this? And then like right after we recorded that, this news came out.
Yeah.
Which was, at the time, I think we said, oh yeah, Azure are probably going to give you an easy way to stand up a Docker cluster. That's kind of what ACS is. So yeah. It's going to give you an easy way to spin up a set of virtual machines and manage it with Mesos and deploying containers across them and scheduling and all that sort of stuff. It's only in preview and it's a closed preview. So you've got to self-nominate and then they'll follow up with you on email. So I haven't actually seen it. You know, it's a video included in the article, but it's kind of, what's interesting about it is it kind of doesn't really even show it.
Yeah.
It's like, huh, interesting. So he talks a bunch about Docker and stuff and talks a bunch about how you do it in Azure, but doesn't really show ACS. And so I'm wondering how early this preview is. Like, I wonder if it's, you know, cotton balls and string or if it's something a bit more than that. It's hard to know. I haven't seen it.
It's kind of going off this whole like Docker thing that you and I talked about in our last episode, which I guess that episode goes live tomorrow. So we haven't really got any feedback from anybody just yet. I'm really curious to hear everybody's feedback as an episode, but in talking more about this.
Yeah, definitely.
That it's a natural kind of thing that you would expect to, that you would expect to see is these different cloud providers making it to where you don't have to worry about the underlying VMs and kind of removing that layer of management you have to deal with. I was watching a really good course on Pluralsight about it, and the guy did the exact same thing. He talked about the same thing. He said just it would make sense. You would think that ultimately we would be getting rid of these hosts, and you wouldn't even need to be worrying about these hosts, and you're just kind of essentially buying logical units of where, how many different containers can I run, or what kind of resources can I run with these different containers?
Yeah, exactly. It'll be interesting to see when it. I've self-nominated. I'll see if I get invited into the preview. I'd love to try it out. So when we do, we will reconvene on this and talk about it again. But basically, it's a bunch of page. My suspicion is it's a bunch of pages and some wizards over the top of a managed Mesos Docker cluster in Azure. And you'll be asked, basically able to say, how many boxes do you want of what type? And it'll go deploy it all for you using Azure Resource Manager and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't entirely clear if it was exactly what you and I were talking about too. If it was all, so I'm getting attacked by my dog all of a sudden. she just say hi, CCJ? Oh, you're looking, she's looking at you. We just recently opened the gate to the upstairs where she can walk around. We had to shut the kids' doors, and now she's coming to explore and everything. And it's nice to have somebody join me in the office sometimes. Anyway, nice. I'm not sure if this is the same thing that you and I were talking about, where it truly is like getting away from managing the VMs. Is it really a container service where it's like, look, just buy a bunch of containers and you're all good with us?
This is definitely catching up with AWS in this area. AWS has had a container service for some time.
Oh, have they? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so this is kind of heading towards that, I suspect.
Gotcha. Hey, I found the article I was looking at. I found something from TechCrunch.
Oh, yeah.
Here's this is a business I'm surprised it's taken it so long. You ever tried to wire money from one country to another country?
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't exactly happen over like instantly.
No.
And you got to pay these big fees for exchanging the currency and all that kind of junk.
Yep. And you got to find all of these random numbers that you never use in any other part of your life except when you want to wire money.
Yep. Well, they're doing something right now over in London. There's a TechCrunch Disrupt going on in London right now. And there is a startup called TransferWise. Have you heard of this?
No. Oh, actually, I might have heard the name briefly, but I haven't looked at it at all.
Yeah. So what they did... these guys essentially, instead of you doing a wire transfer from one country to another one, they kind of do a matchmaker for you, and they let somebody overseas do the transfer, keeping it in the native currency instead of your currency having to go jump between the two. And they just kind of keep a retainer of the money on their side, the same way that, you know, like a PayPal kind of works, where they can, or a ADP for like payroll processing.
So this is between people. So they're using people to do sort of facilitate the transfer.
Yep. They're using people to facilitate the transfer. But what's interesting, they've already got like 5% of this market.
That's crazy.
They just came into the their secret sauce is a peer-to-peer model. So like, for instance, if you've got the British pound and you want to send euros, TransferWise will automatically match you with people who want the pound, and will give you euros in exchange for it.
Gotcha.
And it happens like that.
So that's they're creating a market. Interesting. I've done a bunch of this because of being in New Zealand for a long time and then moving money around, and it's kind of a similar model in some respects to how a lot of the Forex or foreign exchange traders do it, in that when I moved money from New Zealand, I just transferred it to my broker in New Zealand, and then their account in the US deposited it in my account directly. Mm-hmm. And it happened in the space of a couple of hours.
Yeah. And so there was no real exchange of money that was going back and forth.
No,
was,
they were just, yeah, they were managing it at each end.
You were giving it to someone who had money in both places.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
And then they figure it out between themselves across their accounts in different countries. But this is really interesting because it's between people. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of like a reverse market. It's like a little bit of an Uber thing. So the guy was one of the main guys behind Skype, as the guy that's actually starting this. He said, we found this when we were working with Skype all the time, trying to exchange money back and forth. And
yep, it's a pain.
We go to try and exchange it. Next thing we know, we go back and look at our money, and we find out that it took a couple of days for it to happen, and then some of it wasn't there.
Yeah.
And it's like, why isn't it there? It's like, well, with these. And so.
Yeah, then you got to do a trace, and then you got to do a this, and then a that, and then it, oh, it's painful.
That's a cool concept.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I definitely want to look at that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Hey, man, we got anything else you want to talk about? Or
no, I'm good.
I'm good on news.
I got to go get onto my little chores list of stuff I've got to, I've had the wife give me to do before we go away.
Okay. Hey, it's so just for our listeners, we're going to take a week or two off because by the time this episode comes out, it's the week before the Christmas holiday. And then the week after that is the New Year's holiday, which I'm sure that's that week in between where it's always business is always dead. So we may be taking a week, maybe taking 2 weeks off. Just kind of depends on things roll, but
we will be back.
We will be back. And to everybody that is celebrating something this season, not trying to nail down every single religious holiday that's out there, but happy fill in the blank for whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, exactly. Nice way to put it.
And just happy time spending time with your family, or if you're single, enjoy geeking out.
Exactly. catching up on whatever you like to do in your spare time.
Yeah. What's that?
TV, movies.
Spare time.
Games. Oh, I see. Spare time. Yeah, good.
You know what you need to get?
What's that?
You need to get the newest Forza for Xbox One.
I really do. If for no other reason in the world, then I want to whop Jeremy Thake's ass in it again.
It's a good enough motivation. I will tell you, man, driving COTA, driving the Circuit of the Americas track.
Oh, yeah.
Is.
I'd love to do that.
It is the most fun track on there. I mean, I was biased going into it, but I freaking giddy like a little. I screamed like a little schoolgirl when I saw it pop up on the screen. I was like, I totally had forgotten that it was going to be on there.
And it hits Jeremy real hard because I beat him in lap times in the last one.
Hmm.
And so he's determined to get the better of me.
I want to take you on too.
I'll give it a shot.
You did that at Spa, right? With the Audi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Spa. Spa was the track I was trying to perfect.
Yeah. I'm trying to nail the nail coda, so.
Yeah, hey, and it's speaking of car racing, last thing I guess before we go, the F1 season is finished.
Finally. Now hopefully we get some real changes next year.
Lotus has been bought by Renault.
Yep.
So Renault's coming back for next year.
That's cool.
Haas F1, first US team, that's going to be back.
Yep.
Or going to be in the game, I should say. Well, they probably won't be in the game next year. They'll probably be like right at the back of the pack. Or
they'll be in the field.
Hopefully better. They'll be in the field, yes. They've got Roman Grosjean,
which
is pretty cool.
If Grosjean's driving, they're going to need a bunch of cars.
No, that's Pasta, man. Pasta.
Oh, that's right. Maldonado. That's right.
Maldonado was the one that... How many days since Maldonado last crashed.com? I'm pretty sure that's the website address. Yes.
It hasn't gotten into the double digits.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, I visited Lotus last year as part of the Microsoft work that I was doing, and it was such a fun trip, and they were such a nice bunch of people. And I'm really glad to see that they will live to see another day and not fold, that Renault bought them. And it'll be interesting having another works, you know, manufacturer in the game.
You watch IMSA at all?
What's that?
Oh, yeah. So that's a no. So it's the International Motor Sport Racing, I think is what it is. And it's they have different classes of races. So, like, they're the ones that do, like, the 24-hour races. They're the ones that do the Ferrari challenges are in there, the Lamborghini challenge in there, Porsches in there. A bunch of guys are in there. They're the ones that when you watch one of those races that they've got there's usually four or five different races going on at one time. So you'll see like Corvettes blow by 911s, or you'll see like prototype cars or concept cars blow by like a bunch of Ferraris. And it's not that they are beating them. It's that they're racing two totally different races, but they're all on the track at the same time.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm excited because it looks like next year the new Ferrari 488 is going to be in the field. So right now the 458 has been the one that's been out there by Risi.
Yeah.
Risi is it's a Ferrari. Risi is a racing team, one of the prominent Ferrari racing teams, and they've been testing the 488 on the track, and they're just like, it is unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. I got to drive in a 911 Turbo S the other day, and man, oh man, put your foot down in that and it scrambles my brain. Like, seriously scrambled. Like, I couldn't see straight. Uh-oh. The G's were quite weird.
You need to come visit me.
If you're not ready for it, like, I don't know, my eyes went cross-eyed. It was pretty hardcore. But yeah, loads of fun. Those cars are like little go-karts, man.
Yeah.
They're super powerful, fast off the line, and it feels like you're riding in a go-kart. It's amazing.
Oh, tiny. Anyway. Yeah.
Rad. All right, well, have a good one, AC. I will see you on the other side of this vacation, hopefully.
Yeah, man. I hope to be seeing pictures from Mexico and not from the Los Angeles airport.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be keeping you up to date, no doubt, but wish me luck.
Cool, man. Hey, happy birthday.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
You're old.
I know.
All right, man. See you later, man.
See ya.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.